So tonight I wanted to shift gears from the Buddhist tradition of Lama Shabkar and turn to another great tradition and a great saint, as who I mentioned, I think last time, a saint of the Syriac Church in the 600s. And his name is Isaac the Syrian, at least that's what he's called, sometimes Isaac of Nineveh. This book, The Spiritual World of Isaac the Syrian by Hilarion Alfeyev, is an excellent introduction because it's an incredible compendium of quotations, as you can see. I've noted a lot of them. I will not try to read all of them, What's extraordinary about not only Saint Isaac, but of the Syriac Church of that time, which is one of the earliest churches that received its jnana directly from Yeshua and the first disciples. It was a very early church where the And it was, although it's called the Syriac Church, it extended all the way to Persia, and Isaac was actually born in what's currently called Qatar, but it was a Sassanid Empire, so there was an Islamic takeover. Basically during his lifetime, a regime change which had huge effects on the church, but it nonetheless was able to sustain its integrity largely because of the great mystics who sustained it in those times, including Saint Ephrem and he was in about a few hundred years earlier, and then Saint Isaac. So the three main churches are the Latin, the Greek and Russian Orthodox, and the Syriac. And then you have offshoots, the Coptic in Egypt, and the Syriac church extended all the way into India, where it's called the Syro-Malabar church, and then beyond into China, where it morphed by fusing with Taoism. And there is also a Sufi tradition in China that has integrated with Taoism and with Chan and Zen. And these are very fascinating forms of Christianities. But I want to focus basically let me put it this way. Isaac the Syrian takes you from the earliest stages of the spiritual journey, where you're totally enmeshed in the anavamala, to use the Kashmiri term, of believing you're an individual being in a world and God is beyond, to that point where the reality, the truth of non-duality opens up. And his insistent focus is on bringing the mind to stillness, right? No different than the Buddhist tradition or Advaita or Taoism or Shaivism, whatever. All have the same agenda. But the Syriac Church and Isaac have a different approach to that, because it is a very deliberate and conscious form of bhakti, unlike the non-dualities of the East that tend to begin with the understanding that you're not really in bondage and you're always already in the consciousness of the one self, and this can actually boomerang on the ego that will misinterpret that as meaning, well, then I don't need to do anything, rather than in order to realize that I must annihilate the illusory ego by stopping completely its chattering narratives. So he goes, I'm going to start with the second last stage of prayer, according to Isaac, which he calls luminous meditation. And there's one step beyond it, which he calls mystical wonder. And here's a quote by him. If you're desirous of tasting the love of God, my brother, ponder and with understanding meditate on the things that pertain to him and which have to do with him and his holy nature. Meditate and ponder mentally. Cause your intellect to wander on this all your time. In other words, don't wander into ego thoughts. Wander totally into the fascination with the presence of the energy of God within. And then you will become aware of how all the parts of your soul become inflamed with love, as a burning flame alights on your heart, and desire for God excels in you. This luminous meditation on God is the goal of prayer, or rather it is the fountainhead of prayers, in that prayer itself ends in this pure reflection on God. And there are times when a person is transported from prayer to a wondrous meditation on God. In other words, emaho, right? That's what he's talking about. And there are times when prayer is born out of meditating on God. All these are different stages in the course run in divine fashion by the intellect in the stadium of this world, each person having his gaze fixed on the crown. I would say the crown chakra is what he's referring to. The crown of the solitary is the spiritual enjoyment of Christ, our Lord. Whoever has found this has received from this world a pledge of those things which are to come. Okay, so he's already getting intimations of Sat Yuga. So, and then the next phase, which is the complete stillness of the mind, which he calls spiritual prayer. The saints of the age to come, right, which is not Sat Yuga, but Sangam Yuga, the age that Sat Yogis are in to create Sat Yuga, the sages of the age to come do not pray with prayer when their intellects have been swallowed up by the Spirit, but rather with awestruck wonder they dwell in that gladdening glory. So it is with us. At the time when the intellect is deemed worthy to perceive the future blessedness, it forgets itself and all things of the world and no longer has movement with regard to anything. So complete stillness of mind brings one into the vibrational frequency of God. And then he says, in the life of the Spirit, then there is no longer any prayer. Every kind of prayer that exists consists on the level of the soul of beauteous thoughts which arise. But on the level and life of the Spirit, there are no thoughts, no stirrings, no, not even any sensation or the slightest movement of the soul concerning anything. For human nature completely departs, and departs from these things of the world and from all that belongs to itself. Instead, it remains in a certain ineffable and inexplicable silence. The Kashmiris use the same word, inexplicable, anakya, in Sanskrit. for the workings of the Holy Spirit stirs in it, having been raised above the realm of the soul's understanding. So the soul is transported beyond itself into the stillness of the Supreme Lord. When the mind is entirely without any kind of reflection, that is silence of the mind. It's not purity of prayer, because it's one thing to pray purely, which is, you know, one-pointed and with total devotion and adoration. But it's quite another for the mind to be perfectly silent from any wandering at all, or even from any insights into the words of prayer, and to remain without any stirring. And then he adds, interestingly, no one is so stupid as to want to find this by means of struggle and strength of his own will, for this is the gift of revelation to the intellect, and it is not within the reach of pure prayer. You can't pray for this. It's not a matter of the will. It's grace. Okay? So it's very difficult, I think, for most postmodern egos to recognize the reality of grace and to be humble enough to ask for it. And see, when you believe that non-duality is already the truth, and you don't recognize that as long as you believe you are a being in a world, your only way to God is through humility, through surrender, total surrender, until there is absolute stillness. And that is the portal to the grace. The grace comes when one has given oneself in that way. And this stage is sometimes called theoria, where theory comes from, but it means the vision of God. And sometimes it's called knowledge, he says, which is meaning jnana, gnosis. And other times the revelation of the noetic essence of God consciousness. So once the intellect enters the realm of stillness, it ceases from prayer, because it ceases from all mental movement. And as soon as the governance and the stewardship of the spirit rule the intellect, in other words, you've been taken over by God, then a man's nature is deprived of its free will and is led by another guidance. This is extremely important. In this phase, God takes over. You have no more will of your own. It is the will of God that then brings the intellect into the final state. So where then will prayer be when a man's nature has no authority over itself, but is led whither it knows not by some other power, and is not able to direct the movements of the mind in what it chooses, but at that moment is held fast in a captivity by which it is guided whither it does not perceive. But according to the testimony of Scripture, at such a time, a man will not possess a will, nor will he know whether he is in the body or out of body. This is a very beautiful description of someone who obviously has been there. And it's absolutely accurate and congruent with all the traditions. There's more I could read, but I'm going to skip. Okay. On the wings of faith, then she soars, the soul soars aloft, taking leave of visible creation. She becomes as one drunken in awestruck wonder of her continual solicitude for God, and by simple, uncompounded vision, and by unseeing intuitions concerning the divine nature. God has no parts. It's absolute simplicity and total stillness because it's beyond time and space. It's the same as when Ramana says in the final stage of Ajatavada, there is no world, there's never been a world. There's only the self. This is the reaching of that through surrender. It is not possible that even one in 1,000 righteous men should be accounted worthy of this lofty noetic perception. And indeed, the theoria concerning our Lord's incarnation and manifestation in the flesh is also said to arise from this theoria concerning the divinity. In other words, you will recapitulate the christening of Christ, the absolute realization, whether it happened during the baptism with John the Baptist or in the desert, but there was that moment. And this same moment is our destiny when we have surrendered. This contemplation brings the soul to the nakedness of the intellect, just like the Buddhists used that word, naked awareness, which is called the immaterial theoria. And this is the spiritual discipline, for it lifts up the understanding from earthly things, brings it to the spirit's pristine theoria, in other words, perception, from God's eye view, and presents it through the divine vision of that unutterable, pristine glory of God. This is the discipline written about by the fathers. Namely, that whenever the intellects of the saints receive hypostatic theoria, in other words, they are one with the Trinitarian God, then even the body's grossness is taken away. Your body disappears. There's no sense of having a body. Complete bodiless, formless consciousness emerges. And from thenceforward, their vision becomes truly spiritual. Now, hypostatic theoria refers to the created state of man's primordial nature, when the human in its most sattvic form manifested with still the knowledge that all of this is God, and God is within, and God is I, because all that is God. It's this that creates the awe-struck wonder. This is the state of the majestic way of life to come, which is granted in the freedom of immortal life in existence after the resurrection. In other words, after your crucifixion of your ego and its resurrection, this is your state. A spiritual theoria is arrayed in luminous intuitions. He who possesses it will no longer gaze at the world, nor will he cleave to his body. If God would send forth this true theoria to mankind, but for a short while, the world would remain without succeeding generations. The world would end the moment that a sufficient number of beings is at that vibrational frequency, the world turns to light. This is a very important statement of how the world ends. This divine vision is a bond before which nature cannot stand. This is the covenant. And this covenant with God ends the intermediary manifestation of a natural world, which is the symbolic expression of beauty in form. And now you have the source of beauty in the formless. It is given especially to those concerning whom God knows that they must truly withdraw from the world to a higher life because of the good volition, the good will that he has found in them. If your will has been purified to want only that, then the grace is received from God. But it increases and abides with them when they dwell in a secluded and solitary place. In other words, stay within. Don't socialize. Don't externalize. Don't be attached to this world. Withdraw into the heart. Let us make entreaty for this contemplation in our prayers. Let us keep long vigils for the sake of it. And let us beseech the Lord with tears that he grant us this as a gift which has no equal. He's really explaining the pearl of great price. When by the inworking of divine grace there suddenly arise within us great thoughts and astonishment at the intellect's contemplations. In other words, your mind enters the infinite, and you are now able to think at the level of the Godhead. This becomes your intelligence. And this which is more lofty than nature, when this happens, the holy angels draw nigh unto us, filling us with spiritual vision, and then all things that would oppose us retreat, and there is peace and ineffable tranquility for as long a time as we remain in these things. And so we want to remain in these things, in God constantly, and never come out of that trance of divine ecstasy. Okay, I'm going to pass over some that are very beautiful, but I don't want to run out of time to get to the highest stage. So the next level of the samadhi that he's describing, he calls overshadowing. Overshadowing is a term indicating help and protection, and also the receiving of a heavenly gift. So this is the ultimate grace. There's still duality. There's still the receiving. But the Holy Spirit shall come, and the power of the Most High shall overshadow you. The former kind is involved in cause your right hand, Lord, to overshadow me, which is a request for help. And this is like, I will overshadow this town and deliver it, let's say, from evil. But thus we understand there are two kinds of action in the overshadowing over human beings that comes from God. One is mysterious, sacramental, internal, and spiritual, noetic, in other words. And the other one actually brings about a transformation on the external plane, in which the presence of God intervenes in karma and brings about a miraculous unfoldment. And then he speaks of its ultimate state. The mysterious variety of overshadowing, such as takes place with any holy person, is an active force which overshadows the intellect. And when someone is held worthy of this overshadowing, the intellect is seized and dilated with a sense of wonder in a kind of divine revelation. As long as this divine activity overshadows the intellect, the person is raised above thought and soul and participates in the Holy Spirit. This is one mysterious kind of overshadowing when he is held worthy of the glory of the new world, in other words, Satyuga, vision of Satyuga, by means of revelation. This is the partial overshadowing, which has been the lot of the saints of the light, as Blessed Paul said, of which those are held worthy who have received from the Spirit sanctification of intellect through their holy and excellent way of life. And then the final, the ultimate stage, which is called illumination, also refers to the influence of divine grace, but it's derived from light and points to the action of God within a person, which is accompanied by the total presence of light. At whatever time, God may open up your thinking from within. In other words, open up thought and transform it into light. Give yourself over to unremitting bows and prostrations. Totally surrender. This is it. This is the opportunity. Don't miss it. And then the light will dawn within you, and your righteousness will quickly shine forth, and you will be like a paradise of burgeoning flowers and an unfailing fountain of living waters. Okay, so this is the bliss and the wonder that we are called to by the power of Christ consciousness. By means of that interior eye, the third eye, the eye of Shiva, which is called spiritual contemplation, and which consists in a mode of vision provided by grace, then the moment he becomes aware of these mysteries, his heart is at once rendered serene with wonder. The lips cease from the flow of prayer and become still. The heart dries up from all thoughts, and because of the amazement that overcomes it, it receives the grace and the sweetness of the mysteries of God's wisdom and love by means of the mode of vision, which has knowledge of events and natural beings. So think of kinematics. Have you ever seen when there's a bunch of sand and a certain vibrational frequency then creates a mandala, and then you go to a higher frequency and it totally shifts, and suddenly there's an entirely different pattern? That's what he's talking about. The world will assume a different pattern, and its divine nature will be perceptible to your inner eye. And you will no longer be in a world, but literally in a vibrational mandala. So when this happens, one forgets oneself. One becomes a man in ecstasy with no recollection at all of this age. With special diligence, he ponders and reflects upon what pertains to God's majesty. And so the ascetic, being engrossed in these marvels and continually struck with wonder, is always drunken as he lives, as it were, in the life after the resurrection. Are you all drinking this nectar? I hope so. And when he becomes intoxicated with these things, he is once again translated from thence hither by his divine vision concerning this age in which he still abides, at least the vehicle, and says, stricken with astonishment, oh, the depths of the riches of the wisdom of the inscrutable God. And then, as one in ecstasy, he says, how long will this age continue? When will the future age commence? Because for him it is already here. The third kind of wonder is characterized by a loss of the sense of one's corporeality, loss of self-consciousness, meaning any sense of being an ego, of being a person, and withdrawal of the mind from the body. Just pure ecstasy, awestruck wonder, and stillness overcome the mind forever. Well, there are many beautiful ways of saying it. I'll read just a couple more. Through the sweet suffering that takes place in the mind for the sake of God, at the life-resorting sorrow of which the apostle spoke. In other words, it's that last moment before ego death, when there is still grieving of the ego as it dissolves in the bliss of presence. Grief for the sake of God, or joy, and a heart that is dilated with the hope for which it continually peers out. With their sharp warmth, this suffering and joy that is simultaneous burn and scorch the ego, drying it up at the seething infusion of blood which provides heat and spreads through the veins, with the flame of the mind's stirrings as a result of the fervor of the hidden ministry that heats up the body's constitution. This hidden ministry causes a wondrous sort of transformation to erupt constantly, which gives joy to the soul and the body. But if there is resistance, anguishes it with a sharp suffering. Very often he will not even be allowed to pray. This, in truth, is the state of cessation. Nirodha, remember, citta vritti nirodha. He's talking about that point where cessation is established. Above prayer, when he remains continually in that amazement of the union with God, like someone crazed with wine, for this is the wine which causes the person's heart to rejoice. Blessed is the one who has entered the door in the experience of his own soul. For all the power of letters and phrases and ink is too feeble to indicate the delight of this mystery. So, I think that gives a pretty glorious description. Well, I think the point has been made, even though he elaborates it further. And he says that in this state, love, God's love is sweeter than life. And understanding, according to God, from which love is begotten, is sweeter than honey in a honeycomb. What is this sweetness of love that is sweeter than life? It does not seem grievous to love, to undergo even a bitter death of martyrdom for the sake of the soul's beloved. So those who are burned at the stake, if they are in this state, they are in bliss. There's no suffering. So, the last point that I will focus on is that to approach this knowledge of the Spirit, you must repudiate human knowledge and establish yourself in a childlike manner of thought. Only those who have become as little children will be able to draw near it, others not even by a little. Spiritual knowledge is simple and does not shine upon human conceptions. Until our mind has been freed from its many conceptions and enters the unified simplicity of purity, it can never experience this spiritual knowledge. A man cannot receive spiritual knowledge except he be converted and become as a little child. I would even say as a newborn child. In total wonder. This cannot be acquired through effort. It is a gift from God. It does not come as a direct consequence of virtuous living, nor is it derived from virtues, though it is given often as a reward for virtues. But spiritual knowledge leads one to the highest degree of faith, which is no longer a faith by hearing, but the confidence of things hoped for and the evidence that is then given of things not seen, not visible. So, this is the ascent of spirit to the Godhead, and it only comes when you want nothing else but that, and you have, by making effort for stillness of the mind, you've discovered all the subtlest obstacles. Because if there remains any attachment to a thought, to an other, to an image, whether a self-image or an other, or any sense of human nature, if any of that is left, the divine nature of the real self will not appear. And so the total stillness of thought is the only portal that will arrive at this ultimate bliss of liberation. And it has to be through the surrender that brings grace. And that humility and willingness to give up every last desire for jouissance of any kind and any last fear of anything earthly, especially the fear of the death of the earthly vehicle, when all of that has completely vanished in the stillness of total union with the Supreme Presence, then liberation, the ultimate grace is conferred. This is the time in which that is given by God for that to happen. The end of the age of Kali Yuga. And he's speaking of this as our assignment to then be transported into the next world of the kingdom of heaven, which is actually the same as that vibrational frequency that you are in the stillness. And that's why there is an instant rapport that takes you through the eye of the needle into the supreme light that then manifests as Satyuga and as liberation from all illusion. So I hope that you found that beautiful and inspiring, as I do. There's a lot more to enjoy in the book if that's the kind of enjoyment that you're looking for. And of course, reading is then to be turned into realization. And it will be given when that is your wholehearted yearning. So I think I've said what I came tonight to express. I hope it's been helpful. The floor is open if there are any questions, comments, or any other contributions to the conversation. But I think this is an equivalent of the flight of the Garuda, but it's the same pure flight into that absolute realm of light. And so all the traditions point to the same ultimate truth and beauty of the real. So I'm done. If there are any online, please let me know.
Thank you, Shunya. It was very beautiful and inspiring indeed, and so many gems. I found it to be a very blissful teaching and a very blissful to hear Saint Isaac again. And speaking of bliss, I wondered if I might ask you about the next retreat. which is entitled Breakthrough to the Blissful Light.
Well, this is what we're talking about. So, yes, indeed, this is the time to break through the wall of noise that is the ego, of constant chatter, and to gain the power of stillness through the surrender of the mind and the heart to God, through the letting go of one's attachments and one's habitual enjoyments of worldly things that take one's mind to a lower frequency, or one's determination to identify with the bodily being and get all concerned with what's happening in the world and all the conspiracies and all the unfoldments of rumors of war and collapse and famine. Be not concerned with any of that, because there is no world even to end. It's only your thoughts that create that illusion. End the thinking that is worldly and in the multiplicity, and reach that silence and stillness, which is itself the realization of the non-duality of the infinite levels of consciousness that transcend the ego and the soul, which are all open to the heart that frees itself from imprisonment in any fixed identity. When you realize that you have no past, you have no sanskaras, you have no identification, you have no loyalty to the illusion, to the family system, the social system, or any of the other systems of the world, your loyalty is pure and total to the Supreme Presence, and you are that. That is the path to freedom and the breakthrough. But in this retreat, we will be offering some exercises to help make that breakthrough a realized reality in the most immediate way, and to have the understanding of the subtlest obstacles that still may be subliminally below the threshold of your conscious awareness that they are obstacles. And they will be flushed out by these practices and will enable the final letting go of the last attachments to the illusory life of the individual personal consciousness. And it will be divinized in entheosis and then raised into cosmotheosis and then into the ultimate realization of the absolute that is beyond all description. And that's what our goal is for all who attend the retreat, who are ready for the realization of our true nature as always free, always liberated, always one with the Supreme Self. So I hope that answers your question.
Very much. Thank you, Shunya. I also have a question, if I may. I was particularly taken with this overshadowing, and made me think of a great quilt that is spread by God. And does it relate also to the grace that you were speaking of in your introduction in the terms of asking for that grace? Is that overshadowing akin to that grace? Is it?
It comes when you ask for it having already earned it, and being able to tolerate the intensity of the blissful energy that will, if there's any trace of ego in resistance, you won't be able to handle the dilation of the heart and the mind into the infinite, and it will try to close off from being totally absorbed into God, and all sense of your own identity will be lost. And he was describing that last moment of grief and burning as your last sanskara of the I thought burns away in that power of God's presence, because none can be in that presence and live as a separate self. And it's the burning and the glory of the release from that last holding on that is that final ecstasy. And then the journey has been completed, and now it's entirely at another dimension that can no longer be understood by the human level of intelligence.
Naveed wanted to share something. He said, I'd recently received an image of Jesus at the Last Supper at a random garage sale. I've taken this to be a symbolic message of giving the ego its last meal and putting the ego on the cross and letting the crucifixion of the ego begin once and for all by taking the side of God now and forever.
Yes, I won't argue with that, but it's very interesting that this coincides with the uproar in the news, because in the Olympics in Paris, they made such a mockery of the Last Supper and turned it into this perverse parody that all of the Christian churches are up in arms at the outrageousness of this pseudo art that is the total disdain, not just for the Christian understanding, but of God, the disdain for the divine and the power of God to fulfill the promises made in the early church and given in the Gnostic Gospels of this purification leading ultimately, not simply to apocalypse, but to what Isaac calls apocatastasis. And this is a very important teaching that he has that you don't find in the Catholic Church or in many of the other traditions. And what it means is that in that final moment at the Omega point, even the most demonic beings will be saved. No one will be left out. No one will be left in a hell realm. They may have to go through a bardo state to get to that ultimate light, but no eternal suffering in hell. Everyone moves back into that light, and there is nothing but that union with God. Even though those who have not earned the grace will be in a kind of suspended animation or deep sleep, but it will be a resting in peace that transcends the beauty that any individual heart could understand. But the complete dissolving of the sanskaras that cause suffering and separation will be granted. Or at least the sanskaras will be in suspended animation, and there will be no one left out of that sense of complete absorption in the Godhead.
A few people have asked the title and author of the book again, if you don't.
Let's see, what's the actual title? The Spiritual World of Isaac the Syrian. by his last name Alfeyev is A-L-F-E-Y-E-V, Hilarion Alfeyev, who was a direct student of Sebastian Brock, who is the great scholar of the Syriac Church and particularly of Isaac. This is a very beautifully chosen selection of quotations that cover the entire spectrum of the teachings of Saint Isaac.
Okay. I'm not sure it's a question, but since you mentioned Olympics, and normally I don't care about the news, but sometimes news come their way to me and from time to time. And I just heard those comments about the black magic through a few Olympic openings, because there is enough people watch so it can put the seeds in the collective consciousness. So when you were mentioning if there is enough people raised to the point which the whole world just turns to the light in no time, at that moment there is kind of like, this is the white magic. This is the real white magic. So yes. It's not like a name matters, but I do feel kind of come to the point I wanted you to give a full image of and address that as is that our mission to collectively play the real white magic together.
Yeah, that's correct. But the world is now polarized into these two polarities. Mm-hmm. And those who are not aware of the light and surrender to it will be drawn into that darkness, even unwittingly, by buying into the impressions that are given by such perverse productions, and people fall into nihilistic, anti-divine, anti-love, anti-beauty, anti-truth states. Of opposition to God, and it's very important that we remain perfect media of that transmission of God's presence into the world, and not have any egoic distortion in our own transmission of what we receive through grace. So there has to be total purification of mind and heart in order to fulfill that mission.
And also when the whole thing turns to light, we actually, it is us to finish the whole nightmare.
Yeah, it will be finished. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know that that's all it is a nightmare. It has no reality. This is already all light. It's just that the gross eyes can't perceive it. But the eye of God, when it is opened, you will perceive there never was a world. It's always been just the light of God at play with these manifest forms. But always they are forms that appear in the mirror of the imagination of God consciousness, but never have any reality other than God.
Mm-hmm. It's like it's not fun anymore. I'm going to do another beautiful one. Thank you.
Blessings.
Another one from Navid. He says, I found the more I starve the ego, the stronger I become. I can feel the power of God surging through the icon. I have more clarity, more willpower, and more confidence. This must be the paradox you spoke of before.
Wonderful news. Thank you, Navid. So if there are no questions, then why don't we take a few minutes and go into that stillness? in which you right now surrender your mind, your heart, your life to the service of God, so that you can be an emissary of that grace and a bringer of the light of the Supreme Presence into the world, so that all seekers of truth and beauty of God's presence will be able to be in rapport with that vibrational frequency that you emanate. And as you enter into the stillness, notice all that is released. All burdens, all past traumas, all beliefs about the ego identity, all must be released, until there is only the pure, absolute presence that is your original and eternal nature. You are the stillness of pure awareness that has no identity except as the whole, the totality of the cosmos is an appearance in the awareness that does not change and is forever beyond time, space, matter, energy, thought. In the purity of the Supreme Presence, feel the consciousness free of karma, free of the body, free of the I thought, free in ultimate dilated expansion into the infinite intensity of the Supreme Sun of absolute light, infinite intelligence and power, and be swallowed up, absorbed into that. And may this state of supreme grace descend upon you and saturate you with this ultimate vibrational energy of union with God, that you will never separate from, but remain completely dissolved into the ecstasy of stillness. You have all enjoyed a taste of the divine nectar, and you will stay inebriated with that ecstatic liqueur of God's finest blissful presence as the gift of grace that is forever. And now, all you fellow newborn infants, children of God, manifestations, avatars, avaduts, all of you in the state of total divine freedom, all of you who are manifestations of the infinite beauty and truth and light of the real, may you never forget who and what you are, and why you are here. Namaste.